Well, hello and welcome to the e-commerce podcast with me, your host, Matt Edmondson. Now, this is a show all about helping you deliver e-commerce. Wow, yes, it is. And to help us do just that today, we are chatting with Eileen Richardson from Imaginary Content. And we're going to get into all kinds of things about content and e-commerce and what it means and all that sort of good stuff. So don't go anywhere because you're definitely going to learn some great stuff from Eileen today, who it's fair to say that we met at SubSummit, another amazing guest from the SubSummit conference. We no doubt will be talking about that. So yes, get ready, get your pens ready, get your notepads out because you're going to want to take some notes today. And before we get into it, let me just say, if this is the first time with us, welcome to the e-commerce podcast. Always great to welcome new listeners to the show. Always great to have you with us. And if you are watching the live stream of this recording, a warm welcome to you. We do live stream the recording out to our cohort members. So if you want to know more about the e-commerce cohorts, where you can get to watch the recording of the podcast, get to come and ask questions all yourself, then check out ecommercecohort.com. It's our monthly mastermind, our monthly membership group. Love to see you in there. We're in there all the time. So come join us, ecommercecohort.com. Now let's talk about Eileen. I'm going to read from my notes to make sure I get this right. But Eileen is the Dynamo CEO and founder of Imaginary Content, where she is shaking up the agency world by cutting the fluff. Love this. By cutting the fluff and delivering top-notch content without the hefty price tag. With a trophy case that includes a Clio award and credits spanning TV to digital, Eileen is the Swiss Army knife of content creation, which I think is the best job title in the world. But don't let the accolades fool you. She is a caring boss lady who fosters a creative playground for her team to produce their best work every single time. Eileen, welcome to the show. Great to have you. Great to see you again. How are we doing today?
Hi. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here. And that might go down as like the best intro for me ever. So I'm going to take some notes. Thank you.
I like the Swiss Army knife of content creation.
Yeah. I like that too. That's great. Yeah.
It's definitely got a sort of zing to it, that's for sure. But whereabouts in the world are you, Eileen?
So we're just outside of New York City in Connecticut, but we do have team members spread all across the country, even across the globe. Mm. But our headquarters content studio is based in lovely Norwalk, Connecticut.
A beautiful part of the world, Connecticut. I was there a few years ago. Some friends of mine live in Connecticut. And just stunning. Loved it. Loved. Yeah. I can see why they live there and why you would want to live there. It's just beautiful. So here you are beaming across the Atlantic. and we were talking about this before we hit the record button that we met at SubSummit, didn't we, in 2023?
We did.
You were speaking at the event. Do you speak at many events?
I did a bit last year. It's great to go out, you know, and talk about what we're doing and listen to other people in the space. So it's been really fun. I enjoy that. I'll probably do some more next year.
Yeah. Get out and see the world a little bit and enjoy it. It's nice actually sort of post-COVID that we're back doing these sort of big live events, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great. It really is. I mean, it was a little bit of like re-entry, right? When it first started again, you're like, oh my gosh, we're around all these people. And if somebody sneezes, everybody would turn around and be like, oh no. But it's great to have some more normalcy because the in-person connections are so valuable. It was great to meet you. I just happened to sit at your table and see what you're up to. It was great.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? It's sort of going back in these sort of chance connections that you make. We've had a few of the, what's the best phrase to describe people from SubSummit? SubSummiters? I don't know. The SubSummit cohort, the SubSummit clan maybe.
Clan works.
Yeah, the SubSummit clan, the SSC, maybe we should call
it. You got to put a name on it.
I'm gonna call Chris and tell him we're gonna call it the SSC. But yeah, we've had quite a few people from SubSummit now on the show. So it's great to have you on. Recently we had Neil Hoynes on the show, who was one of the keynote speakers from SubSummit as well. So yeah, we're getting our money's worth. If you weren't at SubSummit 2023, basically all the really good speakers have been on this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Just tune in. You don't need to go next year.
You know, Oh, funny, funny, funny.
Did you hear that? Someone's banging on my window. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no
They're cleaning
problem.
something outside.
Just let them in. Hello.
Yeah.
So tell me a bit about what you guys are doing in Connecticut at Imaginary Content. What's the MO?
Not much. No. We're so thrilled. We're so excited to be going into the new year with, our clients and the work we've been doing. We developed this niche in e-commerce content creation, strategy, execution. It's been a space we've been playing in for over 5 years now.
Wow.
Last year, we moved into our new headquarters. We built out a content studio. So not only were we doing kind of the, copywriting and graphic design elements of the content, but we're all actually shooting and photographing in-house. So it's been great. It's exciting. It's exciting. I really feel like we're on the forefront of where kind of advertising creativity needs to be right now,
Right.
because that's exactly where the consumer is making their purchase decision. So what's more critical than that, right? Like communicating to the consumer exactly at their point of decision making, in their path to purchase. So we get really fired up and excited. In the old days, it used to be all about everybody wanted to have those, big flashy commercials on broadcast TV. And now we're all like, no, this is where it's at. This is where we're really getting, consumers to pay attention.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I was talking to my son about this the other day because he mentioned to me that he'd understood for the first time the expense of TV advertising, and this the sheer crazy costs involved with it. And he's like, I don't understand how companies can do this. And I'm like, well, it's definitely not something that I'm that interested in myself as a as an e-com entrepreneur because I'm just not big enough to go and spend that amount of money. But I mean, I'm intrigued a little bit, Eileen, if I can, about the studio. So I'm set in a studio that we built down at our warehouse, where we do all the fulfillment from for ourselves, for our clients. So I'm in a studio, in our podcast studio, because we have a podcast agency as well. I am big into the whole podcasting thing. I love doing the whole podcasting thing. But you guys have taken it sort of one step further, haven't you? What's going on with your studio?
Well, we discovered as we were creating the content that not in order to have your content register on the digital shelf, right? It needs to be live when your product goes live. So if you're dealing with a new product, a lot of those other materials, whether you're doing social marketing or you're doing, any traditional marketing methods, those materials don't get done until right up until potentially the product launch and the live date. But in order to be listed on Amazon, Walmart, you name it, on the first day of sale, you need to have your base level of content to qualify for the listing. So we were in a situation where there was a lot of work we were doing and we didn't have any assets. There weren't any, brand assets yet to work with, and we started shooting our own, and we started going to external studios to, rent a space or outsource in some way, and really realize that, especially with my background in television and video production, it just made sense to do it all in-house. So we're not, we're a creative, cohesive unit here that we can come up with the idea and we can go execute it. So a lot of what we've been doing in the 6 months we've built out this studio is a lot of recipe videos, hands and pans videos, lifestyle videos, and we shoot them at scale. It's to your point about how TV commercials are so expensive. In the old days, you would have had like a gigantic crew and, 3 days of pre-pro and this and that to just shoot a recipe video. But we've really started pushing the boundaries of how do you do great content at scale that works in the digital marketplace specifically, right? So that it's not a super busy frame, so that people who are watching it on mobile, which is where 70% of the consumers are, can get what they're looking for out of your content. So we have our studio space here, we have a full kitchen, we have a prop library, we sort of built that all out, and we're expanding beyond just food and actually. Starting Monday, we're shooting lifestyle products in here as well. And just being really nimble and agile in the full creative process to make sure our clients are getting great content that's going to help drive conversion for their products.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I'm intrigued by it because I know for me, when it came to creating video content, it life became a lot easier when I had a place where I could just go and switch something on and just do it. Do you know
100%.
What I mean? It was a beautiful thing. But it's probably fair to say, because I appreciate that not everybody listening to this podcast will have the ability to go and create a studio. But you can rent studios out. I know when we do recipe videos, actually I don't have a kitchen in our studio, but we there's a friend of mine who has a beautiful kitchen, and we pay her a rental fee every day that we're down in there. So there are, and maybe to speak to this, there are some creative ways to get around not having a studio, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, at the bottom line, if you're talking about sort of smaller brands, new brands, some content is better than no content, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the content needs to be good, but you have to make sure you are creating content for your site. So you don't necessarily need a studio to do it. You just need to have a plan for what's going to work best to showcase the benefits of your product. For us, because we're doing it at scale and we're doing, you know, thousands and thousands of PDP pages every single year, it just made sense for us to bring it in-house as a core capability. Yeah. But, you know, a lot of brands that have smaller SKU counts, smaller SKU lists, and are just, you know, working a little more nimbly, even more nimbly than we like to think we're nimble, you don't need to invest in a whole studio. And honestly, our studio is quite large, but we know major agencies that have studios that are the size of just a small office. You know, a studio is really anywhere you put a camera and lights. It doesn't necessarily have to be a 10,000 square foot space with tons of gear. You know, it just has to be adequate for what you need. But there are plenty of resources to do that out of house, whether it's renting spaces or subcontracting out that content. The important thing is that you're thinking about your content as part of your go-to-market strategy, as part of your, you know, omnichannel sales plan.
So the you mentioned that, you know, some content is better than no content, but the content should be good. So if we're going to start thinking about this, say from a startup's point of view, what sort of things should I be thinking about that is going to make it good? How do I know if it's good or bad? Because I think we're the biggest deceiver of ourselves sometimes when it comes to this kind of thing.
We drink a long Kool-Aid, right?
That's a great phrase. Yeah, we do. And I'm just kind of curious, what do you mean by good, and what sort of things should we be thinking about?
Yeah, so I think there's a scale. We call it the content maturity model. And if you're a smaller brand or a new brand, the important things are you're giving the consumer the information they need to have confidence in the purchase. So if it's a new product, your content needs to communicate what your product is, what it does, or how it tastes, or the flavor profile, or the usage occasion. You know, you need to be in a quick, short, ideally, you know, visual style, you need to be able to communicate that to the consumer. And consumers are looking to understand the product benefits clearly, you know, what your point of differentiation is. So let's just say it's a different flavor, or let's just say it's a different scent. You know, those are the things that need to be simply and clearly communicated in whatever content you produce. And that could be a graphic tile, you know, in your PDP page. It could be a small video, 15 seconds, 20 seconds, that clearly illustrates these points. And in terms of execution, yeah, we've gone a long way from even a few years ago where you would see like a cell phone picture of a like wrinkly package on a shelf somewhere that was basically standing up a product. It does have to have kind of the value that your company has. So if your company is a bit like, I'm thinking of earthy, crunchy brands, right? Like, you know, granola bars or things that you would eat on a hike. Those brands, you might want to shoot something outdoors because that's kind of in the vibe of what your consumer's usage occasion will be. And that maybe could be a little more user generated or, you know, from an organic point of view. But if you're presenting something that's really slick and maybe at a higher price point, you know, you need to reflect that a bit in your content, which doesn't mean you have to pay more for your content. It just means that you need to have a cohesive strategy. Your content has to reflect the visual language that you're establishing or have established for your brand, you know, however that best suits you, while communicating the key attributes of your product.
It's a really good point, actually, sort of communicating the visual aspects of your brand, because and I like that if you're doing an outdoor, if you're doing a granola bar, I can see why you can see the image in your head, can't you? Let's shoot that. There's going to be some grass or some guys up a mountain or something. Versus if I'm doing a premium skincare product, I'm probably not going to shoot that in the same place for obvious reasons. It's going to be in a high-end bathroom or something like that, isn't it? And I'm gonna do that sort of imagery. What do you think about? And the reason I'm asking this is because at the time, Eileen, we're actually my company is about to launch another brand, which is a premium skincare brand, right? So we're thinking again about assets and imagery. And so, what do you think about, for example, me going onto, say, Midjourney or another AI image generator and say, hey, give me an image of this product in a high-end bathroom? Should I be entertaining things like that, or should I just be avoiding at all costs?
Well, that's like the $1 million question. $1 billion question, right? Isn't it? I mean,
Absolutely.
that's
And if
like
someone wants to pay me $1 million for the answer, that'd be awesome.
I mean, from my perspective, what's different then about just looking at a stock footage, going to Shutterstock or Pond5 or whoever you use, find a high-end background bathroom and have someone Photoshop your product in. At least then the usage rights of the image you're using are clear. What worries me about that, and I know Google and everyone's working on, you know, ensuring that the usage rights are taken care of. So sure, you can do that. There's no reason not to. You just might find that if you're looking for video, that's a harder plug and play solution. Just looking to create some still images. And you also want to make sure your product looks great and, you know, probably have some retouching on your product to some products have lots of extra writing on them. You want to have it super clean, so it's a clean read for the consumer. Just the key things about your product, the size, the servings or the usages, you know, if there's any variance for skincare, if it's for oily skin or dry skin, you know, those things you want to make sure are accentuated on the product, not just where you're putting it in situ, but how the product itself is cleaned up and really forceful.
That's good. That's interesting. I think the interesting thing with AI for me is I tend to use it for ideas rather than final content, if that makes sense. It's helpful to generate ideas for me to go, oh, okay, well that's the kind of thing that I want, so I can give that to the design team or the graphic designer or whoever's involved and say, in my head, this is the kind of thing that I'm thinking. Can you run with that? And
It's
so,
great for,
yeah,
yeah,
great for
it's
that,
great
right?
for, but also, here's a little tip. You can use it for keywords for your SEO optimization. It's one of the things we use for keywords, and it's actually great. You know, what keywords are relevant for this retailer, this product, this, you know, it comes up with some things that are at least as good as other sources that you might pay for. And it really helps round out making sure your keywords are as robust as they should be.
No, powerful, powerful. So should I be, let's talk about the skincare brand, because it's a great example for maybe of a startup, and then we'll get into some more established stuff. Should I get the need, just having done some research on competitors and actually having been in the beauty space for a while, I understand the need to have images which portray prestige and high end in the product photography. So I know we're going to have to do that well. I'm not going to get away with just putting the product on a table and taking a picture and it'll be fine with my iPhone. I appreciate that's not going to work. Should I also then be thinking about video? I mean, obviously you've got your studio, you've mentioned it a couple of times. Should I be thinking about video? And what sort of things should I be thinking about video if I should be? That's a really long-winded way of saying you know, what should I be thinking about video? But you know
Should
what
I
I mean.
do video or not? Well, I mean, that's a really good question, right? What we know is that video impacts the algorithms, the search algorithms for all the major retailers on the digital marketplace. So having video on your PDP page will help you capture some organic search. So you're gonna need some video somewhere to make sure that if someone's searching for a great skincare product, you know, yours is one of the first they see. That being said, we do see tons of research and take it for what it's worth, but consumers engage better with video than with stills because it's easier for them to learn more about the product quicker, right? So if you were to do a video, you know, user-generated video is really popular in certain demographics of someone trying your product, showing how to use your product. That's really key, especially in skincare. Anecdotally, I know that's a huge thing is making sure people are using the product in the proper way, and those product usage videos are very popular. And you can also look at it as amortizing your assets, right? Because if you're creating a video for social, potentially, you can use it or adapt it for the PDP page as well, and really maximize your spend across different platforms in that way. But at a net-net level, you got to do some video because you're never going to show up in search. Google searches are now actually pulling videos from Amazon PDP pages. So it's super important to find your consumer to have some video on that page. That being said, when the consumer's on that page, we see data every day that they prefer to engage with a video. And what that video can do is, you know, demonstrate the product, highlight features of the product, show, you know, demonstrate how actually you would use it or work it into your skincare routine. And these don't have to be super complicated. You don't have to go look for, you know, a supermodel and you know, set this on a beach somewhere. Like it can just be very organic to your brand. 15 seconds, 20 seconds, like, hey, here's, you know, a moisturizer we're using today or whatever the demonstration might be. But it is really important to have that as part of your plan.
That's really good. That's really good. So I've got some video ideas there. Just for those listening that might not know, Eileen, just explain what you mean when you say PDP.
Sorry, PDP is your product description page. So if you're on Amazon buying face wash, the page that has a product you might be looking at often has bullets and copy describing that product. And then on the left of the main image, you'll see sort of these smaller images that you can click on for more information. That's also where you could see a video. So your product description page, that PDP page, whether it's on your own website, whether it's on a Shopify website, or whether it's on a retailer like Amazon or Walmart or whomever, that is where your product really needs to shine and make sure it's communicating, you know, in all points. Some people might look at the bullets and not look at the video. You know, every touch point you have to use on those pages needs to be very clear product benefits and features communication.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I'm curious, do you have an opinion on, so if I'm thinking back to earlier on today, I was on the Amazon website. I was looking at a product, a diesel heater, bizarrely. I won't explain why, it's just a very boring story. But I was looking at a diesel heater on Amazon, and there was like seven photos and a video. And I'm listening to you talk. The first thing I did was I just literally go straight to the video and watch it. Right, it's like a minute long video showing me how to install the said diesel heater and how easy it is for me to do that. And so I'm like, okay, cool. And I've got all that within inside of a few seconds of just watching the video. But thinking back to it, the video itself is embedded into Amazon's ecosystem. It didn't take me to a YouTube video. It didn't have a pop-up with a YouTube video in. Is that important? I mean, Amazon must be doing it for a reason, or does it, if you're just starting out, an embed from YouTube is just as good? I'm kind of curious as your thought on
If
this.
you're just that's a really good insight that you uncovered. You know, Amazon does not allow you to link out to any other site. So you don't have a choice. If you're listing on Amazon, you have to upload that video, you know, as part of their Vendor Central product page. In general, the fewer clicks and you know, redirects a consumer has in their journey to purchase, the better, right? Because you're going to lose them somewhere along the way. So wherever possible, embed it. If you need to click it out to a YouTube, it's better than not, but embedding it is your first choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. So I've got my brand. I've got some really nice photographs of my skincare product. I've got some videos showing how to apply it. Just talking about maybe some of the features of it, why it's, you know, some of the things that you need to think about when using it, et cetera, et cetera. And I've done all that within sort of 15, 20 seconds. I say I, there's no way I'm doing that video, Eileen, because I'm not my target market, right? So I get that. I don't think ladies will want to see, you know, the white bearded man just applying this to his face. Maybe they would. Maybe I'm misjudging. I should maybe test they, it, perhaps. Yeah. So what else do I need to be thinking about?
Well, I think there's a real shift, and we see it with major brands as well as emerging brands, right? It's like really understanding that your digital marketplace strategy, and by that I mean, you know, how you're representing your product on your website or on the Amazons of the world, it has to be as thoughtful and cohesive as the rest of your marketing strategy. It's still a bit of an also-ran, and it surprises me every day because, you know, we're all buying stuff online. Like, how can it be a second thought? So it needs to be part of your overall marketing plan. The consumer messaging needs to be tied into your consumer messaging in anything else you're doing. The look and feel, as we said, the style, down to the font you use in your chyron, if you're, you know, putting benefits on screen, it all needs to tell the full brand story cohesively and work with the rest of your brand. And that's super important. That is a big miss, I find. People are still looking at this content as like, oh yeah, maybe we'll, you know, throw this up on our website or throw it up on our Shopify store. And it's like, no, that's not good enough anymore. You can't do that. It's as integral to your plan as anything else. So if you're starting from that position of, here's my marketing plan, here's what, you know, our key product benefits are, what our visual language, look and feel of our brand is, you know, the packaging all relates into that, obviously. Anything else you might be doing, if you're buying digital banners, if you're doing social, it all has to work together. And so if you take that approach when you come into how you design your page, you're already, you know, many steps ahead of most. And I think you just always need to, you know, focus on what you control, which is maximize the SEO opportunities, whether it's in the title, the bullets, the keywords you're using in the actual product descriptions, as well as back-end keywords. You want to make sure you're capturing organic search. It's, you're leaving money on the table if you're not, and it's easy enough to do. So you want the cohesive overall strategy. You want to maximize your keyword optimization from your titles through to your copy. And then you want to design the creative to make sure that you're picking up on the communication points consumers need to know to have confidence in their purchase. So whatever you do on your product page, in your tiles, or in your video, has to have that top line thought of like, okay, we know when we went out to test if this product was viable, that consumers were really excited about XYZ and really asking about ABC. Well, then you want to make sure that you're communicating those things very clearly on the page, in the visuals and in the copy. So the whole point of your page is to make sure that the consumer knows what they're going to buy and then is happy with it. Yeah. You know, we've worked with an auto brand that had a gigantic problem because the mechanics that were ordering parts from them would always order two or three because they were not sure if it was going to be the right thing that they needed. Right. So what happens when they get two or three? They find the one that works, and what happens to the other two? They have to bring it back to the store. Yeah. Somebody has to collect it, catalog it, get it back out to sale, and the cost of all that was enormous, right? Yeah. So obviously you're building consumer loyalty by having consumers get what they think they're getting, and you're avoiding the cost of returns, which is significant, especially for a small business. You know, you don't want someone sending something back to you saying like, I thought it was a travel size and it's, it's the mega or
Yeah.
whatever the case might be. The point being, consumers need to know and understand what they're getting and have confidence in that purchase. So when it comes to them, the reviews they give you, which are extremely important, are positive. This is what they thought they were getting, and they're happy with it, right? Nobody likes to be like, oh, this isn't what I ordered. How many reviews like that have you seen? I thought the texture was going to be
Yeah.
thicker. I thought, I've used it on dry skin, but my skin, but it says now it says oily skin. Like, you need to think through what your consumer research strategy you've used to develop this product tells you about your consumer and make
Yeah.
sure that's reflected in the communication points.
Love that. Love that. As you're talking, I'm remembering with our supplement business. I remember we put on the site the measurements of the supplements, right? Because some supplements you take can be actually be quite big. And so it was a common question. So we're like, well, let's put on the website the measurements of the supplement. So this supplement is whatever, 17 millimeters tall. The problem that we ran into, and what I think you've just addressed there, Arlene, is actually we had the right information. It was just presented in the wrong way. So you might not understand what 17 millimeters is, but you might understand the height of a, I don't know, a 10p piece if you're in the UK, or a 25 cent piece if you're in the States. You might be able to do that, and I think this is one of the things that Apple did very well, wasn't it, with the iPod? It's what they're famed for, 10,000 songs in your pocket kind of thing, rather than a 3 gigabyte hard drive. So in
Right,
terms of
exactly.
how they communicate it, actually, that became as important, wasn't it? So you've got to communicate all the features, the benefits. You've got to answer the questions that consumers have in their mind on your pages, but you've got to do it in a way that actually makes sense to them, right?
So we saw crazy success. We were doing a product page for a product that came in a lot of different sizes. It's like the brick size or the pouch size or this or that. When we put the product in scale on a kitchen counter next to a pan or something that you could understand the scale, we saw a lift in conversion, greater than 20%,
Wow.
just by making sure the consumer understood what this product looks like compared to that product. And they really understood what they were getting. They could anticipate it. Just like you're saying with the vitamin, like with the vitamin size, that's a great call out because it speaks to exactly what we're talking about here, which is like making sure the consumer knows exactly what they're getting. If somebody can't swallow a big pill, they're gonna send that back to you or not buy it from you again and, be annoyed that they didn't get it right the first time because they were probably
Yeah.
waiting to take that supplement. So, you lose all kinds of traction and confidence in addition to the cost of having to take that back and refunding. So the more specific you can be, and in a clever way, of course, like that exactly the Apple example is great. They do so many things so well. The rest of us are always in awe, but we play around a lot with like serving size. If you say something is like 1.6 ounces, what does that mean to anybody? Well,
Yeah.
it's better if you tell them like how many average servings that could be, and then you show them what an average serving looks like because a serving for you might feel different than a serving for me, so getting really into that granular level, but in a way that is on brand with the visuals and how you're actually communicating that.
Yeah, it's a really powerful point, isn't it? And so you're actually using this content, in effect, whether it's video, whether it's written text, to overcome every single objection maybe that's in a consumer's mind, but at the same time educate them to what it is they're going to get. So when they get it, there's no hidden surprises in a bad way, right? It's kind of like this is not unexpected. I mean, you might want to do something. There's that phrase, isn't there? You sell the steak but deliver the sizzle. You might want to deliver a good surprise, but actually they're not caught out in a bad way. And I think that's the essence of what you're trying to say, right?
Yeah, I agree with all of that, but I think also to add on to that, you want to inspire. You want to, build brand loyalty. You want whatever's unique about your brand, the tonality, the language, the, spirit, and you want to inspire usage occasions. Just for example, if you were selling your skincare product, you want this to be something that is maybe a little aspirational, that one consumer tells another consumer about, or gives them ideas on how to use it that maybe uses up the container faster. You need this morning, noon, and night, or whatever it might be. In the case of food, since we do a lot of food, we like to show different usage occasions, different recipe usages that you might not have thought of, because we know that consumers are always looking for recipe inspiration. So it's like, oh, I didn't know I could use this to make something like that. That sounds really good. And then you have a consumer needing it more often because they're using it more. So there's always a little bit of the aspirational aspect. We want to be really practical and pragmatic and ensure everything you just said, that the consumer knows and what they're buying is, happy and satisfied when they get it. But you also want to have a little surprise and delight slash inspirational aspect to what you're doing to help, continue the sales and inspire the consumers.
Who do you see doing that well, Eileen? I'm really curious.
There's people who are doing it well in different ways, right? Like we do so much content, we get lost in what we do, but we're always trying to see who else is out there doing things. I think it depends. You have to give me a category because it's like one of those questions that are so broad. I'm like scanning my mind for everything I've looked at recently. Like in coffee, I think Dunkin' Donuts has done some nice things on their PDP pages. They have a lot of seasonality, which is something that's really great. Consumers respond to that. It brings to mind, to diverge from your question for one second, the other thing to keep in mind when your content is you can't just set it and leave it there for 3 years. It needs to be refreshed. You have to keep it fresh. And like Dunkin' Donuts is great at the seasonality. Most brands can't afford to seasonally update everything about all their content. But perhaps you can update some keywords to capture that search, or you can have one image that, is a usage occasion related to a holiday. But you're going to lose traction in the algorithms as well as appear too generic to your customers if you're not doing some regular refresh. And then people always ask me, like, well, how often should we refresh? It's like, well, how often can you afford to refresh? I don't know, at least once a year, at least once a year. But if you're really trying to make a stand with a new product, you should be updating those keywords, every quarter at the least.
Yeah, super powerful. I love that. And I'm actually, as you're talking, I'm thinking, oh, there's probably one or two things I need to refresh on our site because it's probably been there for a few years. Just as you're talking, I'm going, yes, I'm guilty, Your Honor, guilty as charged. There's a few things we need to resolve there. Eileen, listen, I am aware of time, and it is rapidly escaping from us. And I feel like we're just getting going here, but super useful. Some really good ideas for me actually on the skincare brand already. If people want to reach out to you, if they want to connect with you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, feel free to check out our website, which is imaginarycontent.com. You could always reach out and email me directly, ilene at imaginary.com. And this was so fun. Actually, I feel like maybe a part two sometime in our future, because we did just get started.
We really did. We should do it in the new year. We should. I mean, at the time of
Yeah.
recording, it's Christmas. I'm not sure when this comes out, but we'll get set up on that. We'll do it like a part two. This is the warm up.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate the conversation.
Oh no, it's been great, and thanks for your insight. And we'll definitely get you on, and I'm going to pick your brain some more about what we're trying to do. So
Yeah.
it's a beautiful thing, a beautiful thing. Eileen, thank you so much for joining us here on the
You're welcome.
e-commerce podcast. What an absolute legend! Do make sure you reach out to Eileen and see what they're doing. The website's awesome, actually. I was on it earlier thinking, this is really clever. That's really clever. There's a few ideas you can definitely steal just off of the website. So go have a look.
Thank
Awesome.
you.
Yeah, no, dude. I think when people steal stuff, it's the highest form of compliment. What is it? Imitation is the highest form of compliment or something like that.
Of flattery. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. But do check it out. So also do make sure you check out today's show sponsor, the ecommercecohort.com. Come and have a look. If you've not been there already, come and see what it's all about. We'd love to see you in that group. Also be sure to follow the e-commerce podcast, wherever you get your podcast from, because of course we have yet more great conversations lined up. I don't want you to miss any of them. And in case no one has told you yet today, let me be the first. You are awesome. Yes, you are. Created awesome. It's just a burden you have to bear. Eileen's got to bear it. I've got to bear it. You've got to bear it as well. Now, the e-commerce podcast is produced by Aurea Media. You can find our entire archive of episodes on your favorite podcast app. And the wonderful team that makes this show possible includes the majestic Sadaf Bainon and Tanya Hutzlak. And also our theme song was written by Josh Edmondson. And as I said, if you would like to read the notes or the transcripts, you can get them for free on the website at ecommercepodcast.net, which incidentally is where you can sign up to the newsletter if you haven't done so already. Because if you're on the newsletter, all of this stuff comes straight to your inbox every week, automatically. It's a beautiful thing. So check it out at ecommercepodcast.net. So that is it from me. That is it from Eileen. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a fantastic week wherever you are in the world. I'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Thank you.